Inside the Birds is going to be in Arizona. We're also back, and of course, Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher. Adam's in Arizona. I'm in Arizona, of course, and we're just not in the same spot at the moment. And listen, we are excited. We're ready to go. And I'll tell you this, the cool thing is, this is the Wednesday morning podcast. You guys waking up, listening to it, getting ready as the game inches closer. It must feel agonizingly far away still. But like, not a lot has happened. You know, they had the big crazy media day on Monday. Tuesday, not much from a practice. I mean, the stuff starts pretty much today. The practices that will take place out here in Arizona, Adam. I mean, we'll start to get injury reports and things like that that'll get everybody in sort of game day mode pretty soon here. And then, of course, we've got a lot coming everybody's way.
Yeah, we do. And then we drop our previous show on Friday. We'll have some details for our pregame shows and postgame shows. And it's great being out here because the Eagles are in it. That we have no idea who we're going to run into. We figured it's going to be a lot of alumni. In fact, we've already booked a couple so far. But there might be 30 guys on Radio Row. Who knows? We're going to try to grab them all. So I'm looking forward to that. And it's just I've done like 4 or 5 interviews already since I've been out here. It's just almost surreal going up against Andy Reid. If you would have told me that before, I did an interview with Fanatic on Tuesday, I think it was. And I just said, I'm just kind of blown away. It's just started hitting me. It hadn't really sunken in. That's actually Andy Reid. I know it was 10 years ago, but still. And all the people that work for the Eagles and now have worked for working for the Chiefs. And there are a couple of people I didn't realize I was there. I didn't know Juan Casillo's son was on the scouting staff. I didn't even know that. Greg, I think his name was. I remember
so he wanted Ted, to get. So is Ted Williams' son. He's on the coaching staff, actually. Okay. Yeah.
There might actually be more than 20 people who work for the Chiefs that have some tie to the Eagles. Eric Bieniemy, because he was a player for Andy in 99, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. That's the other stuff, the sidebar to this thing. It's so cool. And I'm glad that we're going to have good weather here. It wasn't like 5 years ago trying to get to the Mall of America and so freezing trying to walk over there. I stayed like an hour out of Minneapolis to save money. Radio Row in the food court was the biggest disaster ever. It's just because you couldn't get to anybody. And the great thing about this one is in Convention Center. I've done this one a couple times. It's phenomenal. Great setup. So we look forward to bringing you guests and talk. And Andrew DiCicco will join us later today. Can't wait for that. And as you said, we'll get to the practice stuff and injury report, early injury report, which we have, which has been updated, actually. The Chiefs made a couple of interesting roster moves. But the big thing we've had leading up to this game is we got John DeFilippo on Monday. We just kind of said, oh, you know, I think it's time to bring him back. Why not? And what this of all the times we've had John on, I think this might be the best one.
Yeah, he was really good. I mean, the story, John's such a good storyteller. And the ones about the Philly special, how it wasn't working out in practice. And then, of course, the acting job from Nick Foles and just what it's like to go out to Super Bowl and deal with the entire frenzy. John was great at, and man, that guy's definitely got a career in the media if he wants one, but we know he's going to be the head coach of the New Orleans Breakers of the USFL, which starts pretty soon. So we're even more thankful that he's able to take some time and come on with us, Adam. And so to your point, for the next starting today, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and for it may have already started for depending on what time you listen to this, but we are doing live streams pretty much all afternoon from Radio Row. We have a ton of interviews set up. We've got Zach Ertz scheduled to come on with us, Jason Avant, Greg Cosell, Ron Jaworski, we believe will come on with us, Clay Harbor, former Eagles tight end, who's been doing a lot of media work and is really good, by the way. Looking forward to catching up with him. We're going to have some guys from PFF. Sam Monson's going to stop by and really break down the game from a very data-driven analytical standpoint, and even more. As we speak, we're updating the schedule left, right, and center. Ross Tucker expected to come on with us too. Some of this will change. It's all kind of fluid. Lou Riddick expected to come on from ESPN and also a former Eagles front office guy. So we've got all these guys. We've got a schedule, but as Adam knows and as I know, things are going to get moved around, changed around. So we'll get our four, it's going to be about 4 hours a day, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of live streams. It may not be hour, bam, hour two, hour three, hour four. There might be some time and space in between as we work some things out. It's the first time we're doing this. It's our maiden voyage as an ITB. So we're just trying to figure out everything that works best for our listening audience as far as what time blocks work well and also when we can schedule and do the show at the same time. But the bottom line is, even if you miss something, it's all going to be living on our YouTube channel, and we're going to podcast everything too. So we're really going to clutter up your podcast feed, but I think you're not going to mind it because it's going to be a lot of great interviews that we're doing. And then we're also going to do some separate stuff for our Patreon subscribers as well. You and I are going to plan to do an Ask ITB live stream while we're out here for them at some point. So just kind of stay tuned and we'll keep everybody updated as we go along.
In fact, that we're going to do that live stream from Radio Row for the Patreon people. And if I got a couple ideas on who I'd like to grab here later today and see if they'll be available maybe later in the week. One's a pretty famous ex-quarterback, NFL quarterback, who I just ran into getting off my plane the other day.
Okay.
This is the best part about coming here, these Super Bowls. You have no idea who you're going to walk into. I saw Ed McCaffrey, Christian's father, I know a little bit. Saw him walking over, but we'll get this straightened out. But as Jeff said, everything's going to be archived. So, you know, generally, most of you listen to the archive anyway. Live audiences are not even close to the archive audience. We get that. And then also the Q&A show they dropped their show. People are loving it, man. They tell some great stories.
Really great stories. Now Quentin is the only one of the two that actually has played in a Super Bowl. He played in the one in 2004. He was mostly a special teams guy, but his memory recollection of things that happened, including Freddie Mitchell almost getting his ass sent home for talking too much trash about the New England Patriots secondary, almost landed Freddie Mitchell on a one-way ticket back to Philadelphia before the game even started. So kind of crazy stuff there. And just really good stuff from both of them and on preparation. And then they broke down the game. I think that they had really phenomenal X and O breakdown. They even brought up some things, Jason specifically, because he's been watching a lot of tape on the Kansas City offense, on what he thinks the Chiefs will do to counteract what the Eagles do defensively. And just to give a little hint, right, because I had not considered this and I didn't realize that Andy was doing this, but apparently Andy has been max protecting a lot more than we remember him doing in Philadelphia. He still gets the five outlets, but he keeps guys in to chip and, kind of get an extra body in chipping or I forget there's another term for when you kind of just knock a guy. You don't give him free ride to the quarterback and then you release. So Andy has been doing that more. Jason thinks that that'll be a big part of the game plan. We know that as we get into the breakdowns, Adam, the Chiefs have a really good offensive line, but if there's one weak spot, it's right tackle, where he's really struggled. Wiley is his last name, right? Andrew Wiley, that's his name, I think?
Andrew Wiley, yes.
Andrew Wiley, he really struggles. I mean, you go look at the stats, and he's the one that you draw the red circle around. So the Chiefs will obviously have a plan for that, knowing that Wiley can struggle at times, and that Hassan Reddick will be lined up against him. So I really, I recommend listening to Q&A and really getting the best breakdown that you can get this in this advance of the game so far. One last thing I also want to say, we've been getting a couple emails about it and some comments about it on different platforms. So we are taking action. We know that since we moved to a new podcast platform, Spreaker, there has been an issue with the ads. Like they're constant. They're not placed in good times, interrupting. So we're working with our podcast platform to change that. Just give us some time. Might take us getting past the Super Bowl here. We know it's frustrating. We're aware of it. And I just want everybody to know that, again, this is a new platform that we're using and we apologize, but we do plan to have it fixed as soon as we can get to it.
Okay.
So that's on that. And basically, we just look forward to the next, you know, bunch of days here. It's going to be an awesome time bringing you great coverage. And I think it's going to be great for us, Adam, just to kind of sit down with a lot of these people, who, whether they're coaches, scouts, legends, people involved with the game, to just talk football. It's going to be great.
Can't wait for it. Oh, by the way, I got my Patreon chat tonight, probably about 8 Eastern. Remember, we're mountain time here, so we're 2 hours behind Eastern because they don't have daylight savings here. I always forget that.
Right. All right. And also our pregame show on Sunday, that's as normal, 10 a.m. till noon, doing it at Rivers Casino. So we might have a little bit different of a talent staff with us, but it's going to be guys who really know how to break down the game the best. So you'll still get what you normally get from Inside the Birds pregame live. All right, so let's get into just a few of the things that we do know about from game-related, as far as injuries, transactions, things of that nature. We'll get into that first, but I do want to remind everybody to go get your game on at the Gallery Bar, Book, and Games in Ocean Casino Resort. This football season, cheers your favorite drinks while cheering on your favorite team. Get in on a parlay while in the middle of a party. Go for the sports scene and go for the endless screens. Go to the Gallery, go to Ocean. Go for the win. For more information, visit theoceanac.com. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right. Speaking of injuries, Adam, there were a few people who noted that something seemed a little off with me in the last podcast that we had on Monday morning with DeFilippo. So they noticed that I wasn't quite myself. I happen to have been, as you know, I was quite sick the night before. It was something going on with my stomach. So I apologize if I didn't have my normal exuberance or that look on my face was a little questionable, but I was doing my best to make it through. And I really did enjoy doing the pod with Flip, but I wouldn't have said anything if we didn't get a couple of comments. There was something wrong with Jeff there. So I was just doing my best to get
energy.
Through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, when you have a 24-hour little deal, it the energy crushes you, but thank goodness you're good to go.
Yeah, I was up all night long refunding whatever it was I had ate for the last day or two. So it was not fun. I wouldn't have wished that on my worst enemy. All right, speaking of other injuries, the Chiefs, Adam, you had alluded to this in our last pod. You know, they're kind of bumped and bruised at wide receiver. And then Mecole Hardman, one of their good deep threats, who he's been dealing with this pelvis injury. And he tried to gut it through the AFC Championship game, right? He played in that game, right? Didn't he leave early?
He did.
He just couldn't hack it, right?
Correct. He couldn't come back. And Andy was very praiseworthy of him because it sounded like they didn't think he'd play, and he played. Well, but he got shut down, and he's done. They put him on IR. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who had a high ankle sprain, this is actually – he went on IR twice this season. They activated him off IR, so he'll play. So now Isaiah Pacheco, we'll get more into this on our Friday show, but his role has not changed. Pacheco's the starter. He's their main back. Jerick McKinnon's Mr. Red Zone. He'll definitely do that. And Edwards-Helaire, they'll work him in. They also have Ronald Jones on the roster, who's making a lot of money for 1 year. So they're kind of loaded at running back. They'll have to figure out what the rotation is behind Pacheco.
Certainly it adds to the Isaiah Pacheco story, a kid from Vineland, South Jersey here, that they signed Ronald Jones in the offseason. I think they thought that they were going to get a real Rojo, like he was going to be a bigger part of their offense if Clyde Edwards-Helaire were to, you know, not play well or get injured, which, you know, I think you can say both happened there. But Pacheco, he's not starting right. He didn't necessarily seize that job because of the CEH injuries. I think he was on his way to seizing it anyway. His running style has been great for what they do.
Yeah, in fact, CH got off to a good start, then mysteriously lost his job to Pacheco. Pacheco made the roster as a 7th-round pick. He's a very unique running style. Mm-hmm. If you're watching me, he runs really hard. He gets like a head start, and then he sort of bulldozes his way in there. He's got some juice, too, got some speed. Yeah, I don't know why he lasted so long, but, man, Brett Veach, good job by his staff finding this kid. What a great story he's been to get a fine starting running back in the 7th round. My goodness gracious. Edwards-Helaire, I remember we had Veach on in 2020 on our show. In fact, that summer, I remember Brett telling us about CH, but he hasn't been who they thought he would be.
No, he's not. good story by Pacheco there. Now, Jerick McKinnon, we'll get into this more later in the week, but if you want to, if you're a betting person and you like the props or you like, you know, Super Bowl different oddities, Jerick McKinnon's a guy who could sort of, who could be a Super Bowl MVP, even though he's not a household name, because of the way they use him. I mean, he could literally catch five or six passes, turn two of them into touchdowns. He's had some really big touchdown runs and catches for the Chiefs this year. And you never know, in a moment where you need it, he could be the one to get it. You know, whether it's anytime score, even, like I said, even MVP, the guy could have two touchdowns. Nobody would ever be surprised, especially if the touchdowns were the ones that meant the difference in a game. If you remember a couple of years ago, I was wondering if Kyle Juszczyk was going to wind up being a Super Bowl MVP, because he was having a big first half for the 49ers, right? Until it was, I guess, the Chiefs that came back in that game and won it. But McKinnon's he's an important weapon for their offense.
Now, remember, the Niners paid him that huge contract, and he suffered a significant knee injury, missed the better part of two seasons. And this season, he kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I know he did some good things the season before, but my goodness gracious, this is crazy. Almost all of them inside the 20-yard line. It's a lot of flares, dump-off passes, and it's been a great story. He's also not a bad pass protector. You'll see him, you know, third down, the coaches trust him there. And that's kind of where they're at. So, yeah, McKinnon's been, in fact, for fantasy, he's been unbelievable. My goodness gracious, he's carrying people with the touchdowns, as you were talking about. And if you're into, we'll give our props that we like on Friday. The anytime touchdown for McKinnon, I would take that
one. I agree. I think that's a good one. Good one to get. All right. As we mentioned, the practices really start today, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They practice Saturday, got the walkthrough. And it's sort of like the regular season. They have until 4 o'clock on Saturday to do any other transactional moves they want to make, be it an elevation from the practice squad, which they've done the last few weeks. And Anthony Harris has been the recipient of, I guess, two game checks, even though he's been elevated but not been activated onto the 53.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it's weird. We'll have a little bit more on this. I have a couple of theories that would make some sense. I mean, Sasha Ray is a guy that we thought might be a guy because he's a special teamer and a backup safety. He could play corner, vice versa. But you may, you might as well use him. I mean, it's the last game. Why not? As you noted a couple months ago, that there are no rules now in terms of if you used up your two in the regular season, if you used up all your elevations in the season, they don't care. They eliminate that for the playoffs. So you might as well use the two.
Yes, you might as well. The situation to monitor, really, from a transaction standpoint with the Eagles, is the punting situation. So Aaron Sipos is able to punt. He's able to practice, and we'll see if the Eagles are going to make any moves there. He's still on in the practice window at the moment, right? He's not been on the field.
Right.
He's, right. Okay. Right. That's what I meant to say. We'll see if they put him, activate him, and what they
IR,
do.
Right. He's on IR designation to return.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to make a decision by 4 p.m. Eastern to 2 o'clock here in Phoenix, Mountain Time. Do that. That would be the only one. He's the only one. So we'll see.
All right, as far as other Eagles injuries, we know Lane Johnson is playing through the torn tendon. He talked about that a little bit at the crazy Monday night media game. I thought I heard him say he sort of, much like we were saying, he even questioned if he was going to be able to make it through some of those games, including the 49er game. He wasn't sure. I think he said his mentality was, I don't know how many snaps I've got here, so I'm just going to give all I got. And he's like we've been talking about, and Jason Avant put us onto it. He's been, you can see he compensates. He takes his set a little bit different. He looks a little crouched, but whatever he's doing, it's working for him so far. He's been magnificent. So all the respect out to Lane Johnson playing in his second Super Bowl. Landon Dickerson, hyperextended elbow. Now you said when it first came out that the issue is being able to straighten the arm, right? To be able to punch. So that is,
yes, it's his left elbow. Yeah.
Right.
He's got to be able to do that. We'll see as practices get started today, whether he can do that. And a Cam Jurgens injury is new. It's a hip injury. We will see if he'll be available. I would expect him, based on what we heard, it wasn't too bad. But this is a new injury. But the big one, obviously, Dickerson. He's the only one in question that we know about. Robert Quinn now, he's had ankle, foot, knee, and back. So the foot is new. This is coming out of the last game. And, of course, Avanti Maddox, I know people saw him in the boot. That's for precautionary reasons. There's no reason to think that he wouldn't be available. He played limited snaps, but looked very good. I got to tell you, he moved real well, and the tape showed it. So that's good news, because unlike the Niners play a specific way, heavy 12 personnel. They use a fullback, though the Chiefs use a fullback. They're gonna be plenty of 11 personnel, and you need your slot corner there, because they'll run a bunch of guys at Maddox. It's not just one guy. They'll move those receivers around.
Well, no doubt about it. And plus, you know, the whole freelancing that they do within their routes, especially Travis Kelce, could be a little bit difficult for Maddox on with change of direction. I mean, he's a tough matchup if you're 100% healthy. So it'll be interesting to see what the Chiefs do on that side when Maddox is out there. Now for the Chiefs, Adam, I want to fast forward, go past offense, because to me, their biggest question marks are on defense, with linebacker Willie Gay, who is dealing with the shoulder, and L'Jarius Sneed, who is in the concussion protocol, and as far as we know, is still in it until they announce that he's out of it. I mean, those two guys are important to that defense, especially, you know, you need your linebackers, and you need good linebackers when you face the Eagles RPO game, so... there's gonna be a lot of responsibility on Nick Bolton if Willie Gay's not out there alongside him.
It sounds like Gay's gonna play. The word coming from Jesus, it sounds like he's gonna be okay. Well, again, we'll have to go through the injury report and see what he can and can't do. But yeah, the big one by far is L'Jarius Sneed. He's their nickel corner. They actually have depth at corner, but he's the one of the young group of corners he's got experience, and he's good. He's having your slot corner is very important. No question about it, because we'll get more into this on Friday, but they may actually draft six corners, but very few of them have meaningful experience. But Sneed's been there since he was drafted. He's had a significant role, good football player. He's kind of morphed into a slot corner, good player. And we didn't really quite see it with Quest Watkins against the Niners like we thought we might. But because this game is going to be more of a high-scoring game, at least figures to be on paper, it should be. This is a real matchup. If Sneed is not cleared, wow, that to me, I'm getting Quez involved. And no, when he doesn't get very much involved at all, when he does, it's two or three catches, but one could be devastating to a defense.
Yeah, no, I agree. Put Quez out there. You can line him up outside, move Devontae inside, and get him mismatched against whoever they put there at nickel corner. I would agree with you. That's a big-time... That's why I said I wanted to start with defense first. I thought those guys were really pertinent to the conversation here and how this game is going to go. On offense, we do know that Patrick Mahomes is dealing with the right ankle sprain. He said at the media event that it's getting better. As you would imagine, the week off helped. It's trending. All those medical words, trending in the right direction. We hear Nick Sirianni say, you know, he's going to be out there. You know he won't be 100%, neither is Jalen Hurts. You know they're going to deal with the injuries and very likely still play at an extremely high level. As far as receivers, though, as they continue to be beat up there, you got Kadarius Toney dealing with both an ankle and a hamstring, and then Juju Smith-Schuster, who's been dealing with that left knee that's been problematic for him throughout his career, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what those guys
can do. He's got swelling. Smith-Schuster will play. It's just a matter of getting the swelling down. And Tony, and he seems very, very convinced. He's definitely, he said he was real close last week to being ready to go. He expects him to play. Now it's the same troublesome hamstring issue. Now he has a new ankle injury. So you're right. They're a very banked up receiver. They put Mecole Hardman on IR. So obviously with Tyreek Hill now gone, long gone, they're manufacturing points more here. They're having the fact they're playing more 12 personnel than they have in years past. Some of it, you mentioned that before, but some of it may be for blocking, but I think it's just also, it's a different way to manufacture offense going with 12 personnel. Doug Peterson used to talk about that. Now, obviously he had to do it because he had two tight ends. He had to use both. But there's sometimes there's an advantage because it makes you declare, it makes the defense declare how they're going to line up. So not the worst thing.
Yeah, no, no, not at all. By the way, that's another player that if he plays most of the game, if he's healthy and functional, he's sort of like that dark horse. I don't want to call, say, a potential Super Bowl MVP, but he's got speed. He's got explosion. He's a good player, Kadarius Toney, and he could really bring a different dimension to that offense if he's healthy enough and productive enough out there. All right.
See,
so those
with
are the
him. I was just going to say for fantasy, see, you can't. It's tempting because this should be a high score game, but he left the game last week. The first quarter didn't return. You can't trust this guy.
Yeah.
You just can't.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, there's going to be the best thing you can say from a fantasy standpoint is that you got to get him in a low round and that's the year he stays healthy and he was great. And then you sell high, right? You don't even try to act like he's going to give you another year of that, you know? Oh, man. Speaking of buying and selling high, it's a great time to tell our people about Mojo, which is building the sports stock market. Mojo allows you to invest in your favorite players, invest in what you know. You know football. You know the Super Bowl. So turn your sports knowledge into real money with Mojo, the real sports stock market. It's all about real value and real stats. The shares that you buy in players entitle you to a guaranteed payout based on career-ending stats. There's no off days. There's no off season. Share prices rise and fall constantly in real time based on career-long projections. So you can cash out anytime. You can build a huge portfolio, buying and selling on your terms every play, every game, every season. All right? So the NFL, the app, offers over 300 skill position players across quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. Mojo is available in New Jersey on iOS. And just by downloading the app, you have a chance to win up to $10,000 in free shares of player stock. Click the link in the description box of this YouTube video or podcast for a chance to win up to $10,000 into free shares of player stock. And you got to be 21 or older and physically located in New Jersey to trade on Mojo. But again, Mojo will be somewhere near you in the future. So you can download the app from whatever state country you live in and start seeing how those prices rise and fall in real time so that when Mojo comes to your neighborhood, you're ready, locked and loaded, ready to go. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. So I noticed something on Mojo, Adam, that I found pretty interesting. I had the Q&A guys talk about it too. So Lamar Jackson's share price is at $66. All right, it's up 0.01%. Trevor Lawrence's share price is $64, also up 0.01%, which is pretty close, which means that Mojo believes the market dictates is that both of these guys are going to have similar careers, all right? They're not, you know, I think the highest you get Brady at like 100 and something because you know he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but I wonder to you, I'm going to ask you, knowing what you know about the Lamar Jackson situation in Baltimore and seeing how Trevor Lawrence was transformed this past year in Jacksonville, which one do you think will have the better long-term – which one has the better long-term projection in your mind? Which is a tough question because you just don't know where Lamar is going to be for the next
time. I expect to be with Baltimore for his career, but okay. Remember now, Greg Roman is gone, the offense coordinator who designed the run game. He's incredible at it. Lamar benefited from that. Jackson's got a pretty significant injury history the last couple of years. You know, he had the illness 2 years ago. But, man, he's dynamic when he's healthy. He can put numbers up. But I love – now, looking at Trevor Lawrence, Peterson's probably going to be there a long time, which is when you're trying to project, you have to see how secure his job is. It should be darn secure because they're just looking for anybody to win the games there. And boy, they made the playoffs in his first year, which is a great achievement. So in the end, I would say it's the upside to me would be with Lamar because of all that he could do. And I
get that.
For people get on him, he's not a good passer. But watch the way he throws it. He's very comfortable. When he throws it, he throws a good tight spiral. It just doesn't throw the ball a lot.
Right.
Because it was his ability to run, where Lawrence is a decent enough athlete, but he's more of a pocket passer. But they also loaded up. They're obviously much more of a passing offense. That's going to happen when Doug Peterson's calling the plays. It's Lamar's always got that upside. This guy's a former MVP where you've got, I like what Lawrence, after a very rough rookie season, boy, did he make a jump because he better coaching, particularly from the head coach and Mike McCoy's coaching him and Jim Bob Cooter was coaching him. So I would say overall, it's kind of like I set it up. Lamar's got the upside. And if you want the guy that you know is going to be good, but maybe doesn't have Lamar's upside, it would be Trevor Lawrence.
All right, good. I can get with that. I will also say I kind of agree with you. I feel like people are down on Lamar now because of the injuries and feeling like he's not as good as a passer as he once was. But when he had a healthy Marquise Brown, a healthy Mark Andrews, and a healthy Rashad Bateman, which he did not have for a whole long time, but he started to look like a really good quarterback, passing quarterback along with running quarterback. And, you know, if he, Mark Andrews will be there, and hopefully Rashad Bateman will finally stay healthy next year. And I imagine they'll try to bring in someone with a little bit more over the top, like that gave them what Marquise gave them. But when he had those three healthy with that offensive line, he was starting to look like a very improved passer. Everybody remembers that Monday night game or Sunday night game, I think, where he passed for over 300 yards. He carved up, I think it was against Miami, where they were trying to blitz him a lot and he kept beating them with his arm.
At Miami.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think he's capable of that, and they're probably going to bring in an offensive coordinator who's going to accentuate a little bit more of the passing game, and the Ravens always fix their holes as quickly as possible. They'll get a deeper threat receiver. They were just besieged by injuries. So that's, yeah, I would probably agree with you on that. And then I think – go ahead.
I was just going to say, you talk about his passing. I'm sure people forgot about it. The game is incredible. It was 2021. Wentz and Lamar Jackson, I believe, was a Monday night game. It was an incredible football game. Wentz, one of the best games he's had in, like, years. And Lamar, it was a great – just to watch these two quarterbacks, it was just great quarterbacking. As we know, Wentz could not sustain anything. Mm-hmm. Although Cosell thought Wentz's tape was good in 21, good enough. But obviously this season was a disaster with Washington. Right. But that was a fun game. And Lamar was dropping dimes. He was throwing the ball where he wanted. Look, you mentioned he's got Mark Andrews as a stud at tight end. They just have to address the receiver position.
Absolutely. And by the way, I think the more fascinating thing on Mojo as we move on, though, is that Jalen Hurts is still available at a lower cost than both Jackson and Trevor Lawrence. Despite his MVP caliber season, his share price is $58.65. That's about, you know, $8 less than Lamar and $6 less than Trevor. And this guy, so the Mojo market says they're not sure that he's going to be able to sustain this. But if he does and you get on him now, you could get yourself a really good deal if you believe that Jalen Hurts is going to play at somewhat high. You know, he may not play at this high of a level every single year, but even in this realm, then you're going to get a really good quarterback, productive quarterback, and you're going to get a good ROI for that.
Honestly, with this setup, with this head coach, Steichen may, you know, it could happen now, it could happen in the future, but Sirianni could always call plays. They have other guys on the staff. Petullo was his right-hand man. Brian Johnson doesn't go to the Panthers, which we've heard that we know that they have interest in him. Mm-hmm. They'll be okay. Because I remember when Sirianni got the job, and then later on he was talking about when they were going heavy RPO. He said he'd really not had a lot of experience with it, and not many on the staff did, but they figured it out. I have total trust in Sirianni to call plays. And the thing is, and everybody talks about, oh my gosh, the Eagles have so many free agents. Here's the great thing, folks. There's zero chance they won't have a great offensive line. They're always going to have one. You've got Goddard signed long-term. Devontae Smith's going to be here a long time. And so is A.J. Brown if his knees they're able to hold up. They're in great shape. Hurts is going to be fine. I have no doubt about it.
Absolutely. All right. Let's finish this podcast with the discussion. I'm really excited about the discussion we have planned on Andy Reid. This is being called the Andy Reid Bowl for obvious reasons. It's the franchise he really brought into prominence, the Eagles, the team he brought to a Super Bowl and five NFC championship games versus his new franchise that he's brought to the Super Bowl. And what have they been in the last five AFC championship games they've been in? At least four, right?
Yeah, and Andy's record over
that's five. Yeah, I think it's five. I think he's
five.
Yeah, five.
His record in the playoffs over the last 4 years, 9-2. Wow.
Yeah, amazing. So it's a really awesome subplot or major subplot storyline to this Super Bowl. And I've heard a lot of questions this week, Adam, from national media already asking Andy about the bittersweet nature of this game. Is it difficult? It's your old team. There are players you drafted still on that side of the ball. And, you know, Andy's not a very emotional guy, right? And I think he's answered these questions the way you would expect. Oh, I have great, you know, great respect for the franchise, great team, a lot of friends there. But I really, you know, enjoying being with the Chiefs now. And the one thing I can say just from really getting to know Andy the most while I was at Comcast Sportsnet in his last few years on the job, which were not easy years for anybody involved, is that I don't think he's masquerading, lying, or just deviating. I really believe as we go through what led to him having a downfall in Philly and then a reprisal in Kansas City, I've always believed, and I believe Andy believes and has said this, you know, to me and others, that being fired from the Eagles was a good thing for the Eagles and a good thing for Andy Reid. I don't think he just says that to say that. I think the actions have and what he's done in Kansas City since being fired from Philadelphia reflect that sometimes it's a cliche, but sometimes it's real that a fresh environment, a new scenery are good and can give you a new perspective and can give both parties an opportunity to kind of move on when it seems like maybe the marriage was getting stuck in the mud. And that to me is the best way to describe the situation. I can't imagine there's any acrimony from Andy. And I know some people think he really wants to stick it to Howie or stick it to Jeffrey. I think he wants to win a Super Bowl. I don't think he has revenge on his mind in this game. You mentioned all the ties, the friends that he have. He's close to all of them and they're close to him. That actually makes this difficult for everybody involved just because they are friendly and they are close. But I just wanted to start off by saying that the firing of Andy Reid was good for both involved. And I think everybody involved would admit that.
It had to happen. I could tell you, I was actually working from a new media standpoint. I was actually working. I was with the Eagles then. Cosell and I actually were working for Dave Spadaro. And I could tell you, going into that building, I was there a lot in 2012, and being around those coaches, we were like tape on Tuesday night, a lot of shows. It was like really almost depressing. They were that bad. And I could tell you know this, coaches kind of know when looks like this might be the end. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't rescue the team. They couldn't resuscitate the season. It was spiraling out of control. It was ugly. It was just a matter of when Andy was going to be let go. And it was just bad. It was just a really bad situation. Sometimes you just know that the change is good. Sometimes, was it 14 years he was the head coach?
Was it 12? I thought maybe it was 14. I 99 to 2000. Yeah, 14. You're right.
14 so seasons. It had to happen. But here's the thing. There are reasons. The roster wasn't very good. Yes, true. Coming off the so-called Dream Team in 2011, which was a disaster with all these guys coming in out of lockout and it didn't mesh. And to me, the big thing, yeah, the roster wasn't great, but it was losing so many good coaches. Ron Rivera, people forget this, Ron was on Andy's original staff. If you go over a series of years, how many guys left? Losing the great Jim Johnson, who passed away. Brad Childress became the offense coordinator, was his OC, who would then become the Vikings head coach. Howie Roseman was... That was only Howie's third year, and Andy had personnel control, by the way, but relied on Joe Banner and Howie. But Joe, here's what we learned. Joe was barely involved in 2012. It was Joe's last year, by the way. He everybody knew he's leaving after that draft, and he just did not have the impact that he once did. And I think what happened also is Andy didn't quite understand the frayed relationships. Because remember, Andy was on his way out. Joe was being pushed out. Howie was, 2010 was his first year. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, Tom Hecker left to become the Browns GM.
He was also sort of being there are a lot out. Of moving parts in that front office. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, so it was not good. This is not the Howie Roseman show, but part of Howie's problems, I think, when Joe leaving really, I think, was a problem for Howie. In that yes, it's always good not to be in someone else's shadow, but Howie was so young, he didn't know what he did from what he didn't know. He just right. he was a guy who didn't play football, who obviously learned how to watch tape. And even people who didn't like Howie particularly said he's actually not a bad evaluator from tape study, learned over the years. Mm-hmm. But when you're in your mid-30s and you're getting a lot of responsibility sometimes, it's pretty hard. He actually talked about that or in interviews. I just think Andy leaving and Joe leaving and Heckert leaving, Jason Light, by the way, who was there then, he would mm-hmm. wind up leaving, go to the Patriots. But you lose all these people. Yeah, it's going to be a problem.
So you make the point about the loss of a coach. And when I look back on the downfall of Andy, and I hate to use that phrase, but, you know, what led to his firing. I 2012 and 11 really stick out, but I really think the origins of it begin in 2000, after the 2008 season, when they lose to the Arizona Cardinals in the championship game, right? It's Andy's fourth NFC championship game lost. It's in 2009, but it's the 2008 season. That was the last game that Jim Johnson coached. He had gotten cancer, got very sick, and then would soon pass away. And that was devastating for the organization. And what it also did was it put Sean McDermott at the time, who was the secondary coach, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Right in there to defensive coordinator. And Sean was pretty young. Sean's a good coach. We know he's a good coach. Look what he's done with the Buffalo Bills franchise. He's always been a good coach. But at that point, just like you're saying with Howie Roseman, maybe inheriting a lot of power at such a young age and now having, you know, to control everything, right? And sometimes when you do that, your flaws get magnified along with your strengths. And Sean was the defensive coordinator in 2009, and it didn't start off great. Now the Eagles wound up rallying that year late in the season. You know, they were 5-4, and then they reeled off like 6 straight wins. They got to 11-4. Then they lost to the Cowboys in the season finale, got killed 24-0. And then they went to, because they lost that game, they didn't get the division, and then they had to go to Dallas in the first round of the playoffs, and they got killed again 34-14. So that was the last game of Donovan McNabb's career. So you've got your defensive coordinator, who is, as Andy said at the time, trying to fill the enormous shoes of Jim Johnson. And then on top of that, you've got a quarterback change now. Donovan McNabb is going to be traded, and they're going to go forward with Kevin Cobb, right? At the time, that was the thinking. But I really think at the same time as you're mentioning Howie coming into power and the organization was getting a little bit impatient with not winning the Super Bowl after that being their fifth NFC championship game, and they didn't even win that one, so it would be their fourth NFC championship loss of the Andy Reid era, right? And so you started to see some changes on the coaching staff, the hiring of Jim Washburn, after they, of course, so the first thing they do is they fire Sean, and they say he wasn't really ready for that role at that time. And I think if you ask all of them in retrospect, they wish they would probably have been a little bit more. Didn't Joe Banner even say that on the show with us? Yeah.
Yes. What he said was, though, he understood why Andy had to do it, because Sean was really the word around the team was Sean was trying to do too much. Might have been he was trying to live up to Jim Johnson's standards. You know how great Jim was, and I think Sean needed someone to mentor him, because with Jim gone, mm-hmm. just didn't have that. It was too much too soon. Yeah, and what Joe had said, that he should have just been a little bit more patient. In fact, he wrote that for the 33rd team. He wrote about Sean's career as he progressed. And Sean actually, I think, more or less said it was actually a good thing or the right thing. And then Ron mm-hmm. Rivera hired him immediately to be his coordinator.
Sky Motor Cars in Westchester is a different sort of dealership. All it takes is one look at their Highline pre-owned vehicles that people all over the country want and need. Owner Brett Schulter, make sure you don't spend a dime of your money before you purchase the car. Sky Motor Cars allows you to make all the decisions regarding your next vehicle. At Sky Motor Cars, you never have to spend more than necessary. Visit skymotorcars.com today or call 610-918-7225.
By the way, I'm mistaken. They gave Sean two seasons. He coached in 2009 and 2010. But after the 2009 season, they lost to Dallas. In 2010, they had that loss to the Packers in the first round. That was Aaron Rodgers basically taking that team on his shoulders. They came into the link. They won in the first round. And then that's when they decided to fire Sean. And then it's sort of set off a series Jim Washburn got hired as a defensive line coach before they even hired a defensive coordinator. That was a mistake.
Right.
That was a mistake that I'm pretty sure was not just Andy's, you know, doing to have Jim Washburn. There was a lot of influence. You talked about Howie's rise and Jeffrey was involved and they wanted to play a certain style of defense and they wanted to, you know, sacks, and obviously Jim Washburn great at it. And because they hired Jim Washburn to implement the defensive line scheme, there were several good defensive coordinators who interviewed for the job or were interested in the job that we heard had turned it down right from the start because that wasn't the line scheme that they weren't going to play, that they were wanted to play. You know, if you wanted to play a 3-4 like Todd Bowles does, you're not taking that job because Jim Washburn needs to be a 4-3 team with wide nine ends. And so that is what led to Juan Castillo being named defensive coordinator, because Andy ran out of guys that he could bring in there to be a coach. So again, these are all, Andy didn't just become a bad coach overnight. There was a series of things that happened, both controllable and uncontrollable, that all led to what we all saw was not a great situation. Was Juan being the defensive coordinator, him often being undermined by Jim Washburn. It got ugly in the front office. So that season, you know, did not end well. Obviously, that would be the 2011 season, right? Now that's coming out of the lockout as well, by the way. Michael Vick did not take a huge step. They were hoping he would take an even bigger step from 2010 to 2011. I think Pat Shurmur was still the offensive coordinator at the time. No. Didn't he leave for Cleveland? Yeah, he left for Cleveland, right? So I think Vick had a new offensive coordinator. That was Marty. Marty Morningwig became the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Working now with Mike Vick, and Shurmur was off in Cleveland. So there were just so many moving parts. And then the lockout caused a delay, no OTAs.
It was bad.
It was really bad. So you can see this kind of firestorm of things brewing that made it very difficult on the franchise.
Yeah, it was one of these situations. I remember Shurmur left and then he came back after he got fired by the Browns. He became Chip Kelly's offensive coordinator, but Chip called the plays. But you lose all these lieutenants. It's really hard because they had like an all-star cast Andy had put together on a staff. And some of these guys left. It's hard. It's harder. You could have like the best depth you think you have in your staff, but sometimes these younger guys are just not, they're just not ready. And it's hard because when you're the head coach, you can't coach. You have to coach your players, and you try to coach your coaches, but sometimes you just don't have enough time. So it just didn't work, and it was tough, man. Going into NovaCare as much as I was in that 12 season, and it was kind of miserable. Like as much as I loved doing what I was doing, it was just seeing these coaches. You could just tell they knew it. It was bad. But the thing was, this is what makes Andy such a special coach. So he gets canned, and we know that some of his friends told him he should take the year off. He wasn't doing that. He's a coach. He never has had 10 seasons with the Chiefs, never had a losing season. Incredible.
Unbelievable. And, you know, I know that it felt like the same old Andy, because I think the first year that he made the playoffs, he had Alex Smith as the quarterback, and they lost, if I'm not mistaken, to the Indianapolis Colts in the wild card. It was like a 3-6 game or maybe a 4-5 game, if I'm not mistaken, because the first two seats had byes, right? Or maybe they lost as the 2 seed to the Colts in the divisional round. I forget what it was, but it sort of felt like another, you know, typical Andy Reid loses a big game. You know, he had Alex Smith as his quarterback, but you know, either way, it started to feel that way. But as we talked about on a recent pod, he was not the same Andy Reid, and even Jason Avant was talking about, you know, you go watch the Eagles offense in the early days of the Andy Reid era, and they were a very conventional, very what's the word I'm looking for? Archetype West Coast offense, a split back West Coast offense. Yes, he threw the ball a lot. That was innovative. But a lot of what he was doing were concepts that were handed down from Mike Holmgren, which were handed down to Mike from Bill Walsh and yada, 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 the whole West Coast chain there.
Not much of it anymore, though. It's
no.
Chained.
And then, you know, one of the first moves that he does is trade for Alex Smith. Then he hires Chris Ault from Nevada, who is considered the godfather of the pistol offense, who had coached Colin Kaepernick at Nevada when they were successful there. And he starts implementing pistol formation, RPOs. He did as much of that as Chip Kelly was doing when Chip Kelly was with the Eagles at the same time. But it was more like Chip Kelly got the prominence because it's the bigger market and he brought it from Oregon. But Andy started doing some very college-like stuff as soon as he got to the Kansas City Chiefs. Even added more gadgetry, I think, than you ordinarily saw.
Shovel pass. I love it.
Yeah. In fact, it's kind of funny that when they faced each other in week two or three of that 2013 season, right? Chip tried that awful swinging gate play for a 2-point conversion and completely got, you know, outclassed by Andy on that. So, because it backfired on him. It backfired.
So, by the way, that Colt Chief game in 2013 you were talking about, 89 points scored, 91 combined attempts for both quarterbacks. Actually, I'm sorry, 101.
What was the score of that game?
45-44. Alex
so
Smith
that's
had 40.
Alex Smith versus Andrew Luck?
Yep, Alex Smith had 46 attempts. Andrew Luck had 45.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable.
you had well over 800 yards passing in the game.
Who in the world was Chuck Pagano the coach?
2013, was he filling in for what,
was that was Arians? Was that the year Arians won kind of like coach of the year?
I'm not sure. I have to look it up, but
because only Bruce Arians would chuck the ball around 45 times.
Of course,
I'm trying to
no
figure out
Chuck
who else would do that.
Right, exactly, but. Alex Smith, 46 attempts, and he also had 8 rushing attempts, speaking of RPOs. And he has totally reinvented himself. He sort of bastardized the West Coast offense, junked it up. The terminology is always going to be West Coast, but it's not the same offense that he used to run in Philly. It's better personnel, maybe. But the fact of the matter is he's grown and evolved, as you said.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. I feel like both franchises have come full circle, because ever since Andy left, even though his fingerprints were all over the franchise, and even though his, you know, one of his, what do you call them, branches? What would you call Doug Peterson? One of the branches from the tree became the one to lead the Eagles to their first Super Bowl. It did seem like I think Andy leaving and the whole reset button and then going through the Chip Kelly issue changed Howie. No doubt about it. It changed Howie, right? I mean, let's not forget, I neglected to mention the 2011 season, the all those bad free agent signings and trades and moves that also led to a bad roster that Andy had to deal with. That's on Howie too. So,
but it's also on Andy, because Andy had personnel control. Now,
why I said too. I meant it's not just on Andy. Yeah, it's on both of them. But yeah,
what Joe had said, what Banner had said on the show over the years, is that Andy would lean more on other people because he had less and less time, because he's trying to put together a football team. So, I mean, I marvel, though, the fact that it now he hired John Dorsey, okay, his friend from the Packers. John will later be fired for a couple reasons, but it doesn't really matter. That the bottom line is, Andy would bring in some people he's known after he left Philly, that Dorsey understood what he was looking to do. But I look at Andy and he. Because there was no frame of reference. We only knew him for Philly, but he goes into Kansas City, and he trades for Alex Smith, who for an old school West Coast offense, he'd be pretty good. But if you're going to throw the ball a lot, he doesn't have a great arm.
Right.
But he still made the playoffs with them. Didn't have a losing season with them. And I looked at that playoff game. 89 points, 91 pass attempts in that game. That's it. This is him in a nutshell. They're going to throw the football. This is just what he believes in. That's Joe said part of what Banner told us on our show over the years about the binder and all that. But one of the things that he got was from Lavelle Edwards, the BYU coach, was the passing game. That's where Andy kind of learned most of it. Then, of course, Mike Holmgren.
Yeah. And the one thing that was similar, as soon as Andy got there, offensive players started to be even as good or if not better than they were. Alex Smith had a renaissance there. Who was the first wide receiver? Dwayne Bowe, I think he inherited.
Daddy Bowe.
I mean, Dwayne Bowe didn't have a great career, but I bet you he had a 1,000-yard season there, right?
Oh, he kind of got heavy and he kind of lost it, but no, he did some good things there. I remember
Who was the running back from Texas who's always hurt?
Oh, Jamal Charles.
He had amazing seasons under Andy, did he not?
He had the same issue that our friend Brian Westbrook had, bad knee problems. Without that, I don't see him being in the Hall of Fame. I know some people are pushing Charles for the Hall of Fame. He had some really good years, but his career's got cut short due to knee injuries. But boy, you're right, man. He perfect Andy back because of the versatility. You might remember Dexter McCluster. McCluster was a former receiver, you might remember.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of slash sort of running back as well.
Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt had his rookie year might have been – first 2 years in the league might have been his best years ever. I mean, he was fantastic. He was their featured back until they brought in somebody else after that whose name is escaping me right now. But, yeah, it's Travis Kelce they draft. Tyreek Hill they turn into – who's a great find by them. Obviously a
Hall of Famer, by the way.
But, yeah. Oh, come on. Yeah, not even close. Not even close. Unless he gets hurt. Yeah, no, he's a Hall of Famer. By the way, Patrick Mahomes, if his career ends after the Super Bowl, if he decides to retire, you have to make a legitimate case that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, even though it just feels like his career just started. Because look at the resume. It's better than some guys who are already in the Hall of Fame who played 20 years.
It's insane. It's he's just. We're going to get more to this to Friday. I talked to someone with the Chiefs who kind of reminded me of a story. There's someone in the Chiefs I've known for many years, and he reminded me of a story because I want to know when they kind of knew that the Mahomes might be special or something had happened in 2017, kind of, when he was the backup, Alex Smith. But I just marvel at Andy's ability to reinvent himself. It goes to show you in life, even though you lose a job, doesn't mean you can't reinvent yourself. As Andy says, you brought up that line. Yes, Andy was deconstructed in Philly, then he reconstructed in Kansas City.
Yep.
It's made playoffs 9 out of 10 seasons, never had a losing record with them. The thing that marvels me, I'll admit it, I was wrong when they traded Tyreek Hill. I didn't think he could do it. I was like, Tyreek Hill's a game changer. But what he's done is with more 12 personnel, finding different ways to move the football. Not that they're a big run team, but you have Pacheco now, who's sort of their feature back. And still, Kelsey's unbelievable. He'll be a Hall of Famer for sure. It's you got to give Andy credit. Banner, I know Joe's biased because of Andy, but he was the one who said, he goes, Andy's not going to miss a snap. And depending on how you explain explosive plays, and in a way, they don't have Tyreek Hill ability for explosives, but they're still getting a ton of plays over 20 yards, pretty much mirroring last year. As a matter of fact,
there's not been a coach in this league that I'm familiar with who has had this much success with two different franchises. There have been coaches who've gone, like Mike Holmgren took Seattle and Green Bay to a Super Bowl, but it was not a long period of success with Seattle. Parcells went to New England, took him to a Super Bowl, lost to the Packers, I believe.
Yep.
And then went to the Cowboys and was okay, but not like what Andy's doing in Kansas City. I don't know if I can think of a coach who has been this successful in two different spots. I mean, that's probably doesn't exist.
Like in hockey, I know Scotty Bowman did it. For those of you who follow hockey, like with Pittsburgh and Detroit Red Wings. But in the NFL, it's so hard. Belichick, remember now, Belichick – he really never coached the game for the Jets, but he was technically a head coach for an hour, whatever it was. But the boy did Art Modell make a mistake not having him be the Ravens coach, head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But to do it with two teams, to do it like this is crazy. Andy obviously will be a Pro Football Hall of Famer when he retires.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the closest thing would be sort of Shula, right? Who, when he was with the Baltimore Colts, they won
made it.
they won a championship in 68, and then he obviously went to Miami and won two Super Bowls there.
Back to back. Yeah, in fact, he lost to the Jets, though, in the in 69 in the Joe Namath game. But, yeah, he Shula's just – Shula's – and Doug Peterson, by the way, Doug Peterson, when he won his – was 500 – was it 500th game? Was it in 95
that's right.
here?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, he got carried off. Yeah, in fact, yeah, Doug was the starter then. A lot of people forgot about that.
No doubt about it. So, and just to let everybody, if you guys didn't realize, but Andy is obviously only second to Bill in all-time wins among active coaches. Bill has 298, Reed has 247, and he is fifth all-time at 247. Shula, number one, at 328. These are regular season, I believe, games. So, how about that? Fifth all-time, and somebody asked him the other day, if he knows when he's, is he going to be done? Is he only got 2 or 3 years left? And he's like, I haven't really, Andy's answer, we'll leave it at this, was quintessential Andy. He goes, well, I know I'm on the shorter end of the career than the longer. I got fewer years left than years that I've coached, but I haven't thought about, you know, retiring anytime soon. And he looks pretty good. I mean, he's amazing. He's big, but he's still in good enough shape. And he does look like someone who could coach another 5 to 10 years at him. And that's probably great news for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and bad for the rest of the league.
It is. And by the way, Shula was actually 300 win. It was Doug won, but Shula finished with 320 wins, 28 wins. The thing about Belichick is, I remember when he was filmed for whatever, it might have been a Football Life, Bill Belichick. He said there's no way he'd be coaching when he's 70. Oops. Yeah, that's why I don't – coaching's all these guys know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if Tammy Reed wants him home right now. I don't know.
That's funny. By the way, can you name who's fourth among active NFL coaches with wins? I'm sorry, third. Guess. Belichick one, Reed two. Who's third?
John Harbaugh.
That's a good one, but he's actually sixth.
Without looking, I don't know.
Mike Tomlin.
Oh, wow. You know, he's never – wait, did they have a losing record this year?
No, they did not. No, they finished 9-8. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's amazing, man, and they don't have a lot of talent. Does he rally the troops, man?
They play hard for him, man. Play really hard for him. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Inside the Birds, leading podcast and Eagles Intel. We really look forward to this whole week of coverage that we're bringing for you. We hope everybody enjoys it. Everybody loves it. Reach out. Tell us what you think. If you hate it, tell us you hate it and what we could do better, because, you know, we figure the Eagles might be back in the Super Bowl again pretty soon, and we want to be able to do this more often. So, again, appreciate all the feedback, positive, negative. Just let us have it. Tell us how you feel, because, as always, we thank you for flying with us. Inside the Bird.